Our speaker today is Darrell Kennedy Chansuthis. Darrell has served in public leadership positions since 1991 when she was appointed director of the Center for Management Communication at the SASIN Graduate Institute of Business Administration in Bangkok, Thailand, a joint venture with the Faculty of Business Administration of Chulalongkorn University, the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University, and the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. Most recently, Darrell has served as Executive Director of Performance and Quality Improvement for the Tennessee Department of Children's Services and as Executive Director of the Tennessee Center for Child Welfare at Middle Tennessee State University. Darrell is the proud mother of five and grandmother of three, and I'm not sure what combination of those we have with us today, but I think we have some. And she's a Southerner born and bred. Except for the 17 years she lived in Thailand with her late husband, Darrell has lived in Nashville, Tennessee since she was 11 years old. She has served her community and her family in many different capacities and is proud and grateful to be a member of UUFM. The title of her sermon today is Unitarianism and the Wisdom of Faith. Let's welcome Darrell.
Thank you. Good morning. As I sat down to collect my thoughts on the topic I had offered for today, Unitarianism and the Wisdom of Faith, I realized that the topic had come to me as a means of bringing some order and discipline to my own thoughts about faith and about Unitarian Universalism. Thoughts with substance, but perhaps needing better form. And as I considered my thoughts on faith, I was reminded of a Time article I'd once read about Einstein, one of my heroes, not just because of his scientific achievements, but more because of the awe and wonder and rebellion with which he approached the world and his relationship with faith. As a youth, Einstein rejected secularism, which his parents practiced, and after being educated in Catholic schools and exploring for a while an Orthodox approach to Judaism, he later left behind, as well, religious ritual and the concept of a personal God. Yet Einstein was a man of faith, though his faith was more intuitive than calculated. And thus he too struggled with explanations of it. When asked in an interview whether he believed in God, Einstein didn't respond with a simple yes or no as the religious authority of the time would have had him do, indeed demanded that he do. Rather, Einstein shared that he was neither an atheist nor a pantheist, explaining that the problem involved is too vast for our limited minds. We are in the position of a little child entering a huge library filled with books in many languages. The child knows someone must have written these books. It doesn't know how. It doesn't understand the languages in which they're written. The child dimly suspects a mysterious order in the arrangements of the books, but doesn't know what it is. In his determined unwillingness to be fenced in by a polarizing response, Einstein reminds me of Robert Frost's farmer. I told you, Kitty, got into my poetry this weekend, who didn't care much for walls and who argued, "Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly. And I'd rather he'd said it for himself. Like the frozen groundswell that spilled the boulders of the detested wall in the sun and made gaps even two could pass abreast, Einstein kept the path open, unimpeded by the wall of moral absolutism with his relativistic response to the question of his faith. In 1930, after much reflection, Einstein succeeded in writing his credo, simply titled, What I Believe. In it, he shares with us the core of his faith, saying, The most beautiful emotion we can experience is the mysterious. It is the fundamental emotion that stands at the cradle of all true art and science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead, a snuffed out candle. This is, I believe, what the Reverend Dr. Kendall Gibbons in her article in this summer's UU magazine means by primal reverence. I don't know if you've read that article yet or not, but I highly recommend it. That something within us that unlatches and expands in the immensity of some force of nature, catching some hint of our finitude, sensing the oneness of all life, awestruck by the sovereign beauty and freedom of so much overwhelming space and light and sound. And it is what Dr. Bruce Marshall, in speaking to the Davies Memorial UU congregation early last year, meant when he talked about his own mysticism, explaining that what mattered most to him were those transcendent moments when he felt connected to something greater than himself. Moments that could occur anytime, anywhere, outside in the natural world, when surrounded by the beauty and variety of life and nature, between people who connect deeply with one another, in the joy or sorrow that we share with others, in a work of art, a song, a book, a poem, a film, that speaks to us in a special way and touches something deep within. Reverend Marshall, a humanist, admitted that he didn't know if those transcendent moments expressed something of God or whether they were completely naturalistic. But he also said that he really didn't think it mattered, explaining, what does matter are the experiences themselves of something ultimate, something true, something beautiful that brings us life and that is accessible to us, not by hearsay and not by doctrinal formula, but through our own direct experience. Reverend Gibbons, in her article on primal reverence, talks about a spirituality for skeptics, explaining that as Unitarian Universalists, we are not skeptics because nothing is sacred. Rather, we withhold our assent to unproven claims because integrity matters. Because the real experience of reverence is so primal and so powerful that it must not be captured or exploited for lesser purposes. There is within us, as Lord Byron once observed, something pagan that we cannot shake off. As Unitarian Universalists, in our search to understand the meaning of our experience with reverence, we deny nothing but doubt everything. We have, Reverend Gibbons argues, a sacred responsibility across all mythologies and ritual vocabularies for what we do with and about and because of that experience of reverence, as well as with our accompanying understanding of that experience, our faith, that we and the world around us and the creative energy of the whole universe are embedded in the same source and are in some profound way the same thing. And it is this faith that I believe is at the heart of Unitarian Universalism. Whether rationalist or mystic, monotheist, polytheist, non-theist, atheist, agnostic, humanist, pantheist, animist, secularist, other or undeclared. As Unitarian Universalists, the wisdom of faith that we share is our unwavering belief in the sacredness of the here and now, of the beauty and wonder of what is around us, the inherent dignity and worth of those who are with us, and the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Or as Mary Ann Radmacher wrote, sorry, I probably butchered her name, we embrace this holy moment and assert, now, the moment, this moment, is the moment to love, the moment to serve, the moment to seize the legacy. Now. Now is the time to live large, love boldly, reach to the edges of our unfurled hearts and fully enrolled hope. And Pema Chodron reminds us that now is the only time. How we relate to it creates the future. Whether we follow a specific path or experience a pathless journey, we are joined together by our desire to follow where our reason or experience takes us in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. As Richard Dawkins explained in Unweaving the Rainbow, working at understanding the universe and how we have come to wake up in it is a noble, enlightened way of spending our brief time in the sun. Who, he asked, with such a thought, would not spring from bed, eager to resume discovering the world and rejoicing to be a part of it? Most likely, each of us has come to Unitarian Universalism as a result of our dissatisfaction with or rejection of the dogma of established religion and or our unwillingness to wall ourselves in with a particular creed to the exclusion of all others. We are seeking acceptance and encouragement in our spiritual growth, whatever the chosen path. And what of our journey? How does our faith relate to that journey? Carlton Kuhn, a progressive humanist, a Harvard professor, pondered this in his 1997 essay on the nature of faith, and I'd like to share just a little bit of that with you here. As an existing particular human being, he shared, I accept the need for some kind of faith, but I want as little of it as possible. I will follow Dawkins' ascetic rationality as far as I can before succumbing to the corporal limitations of my essential humanity and defending those bedrock assumptions I am willing to take on faith. As with some computer games, I arrive on the scene facing a blank map of my universe. I spend my life traveling in as many parts of that universe as possible, conducting my explorations rationally and even when possible scientifically to make sure I illuminate them as accurately as possible. Thus, I do away with the darkness wherever I go. The islands and seas and continents are revealed one by one. The longer I live and explore, the greater the revealed area. Meanwhile, the areas that are still dark recede. But they never go away entirely. I can never see the totality. I have to assume certain things about those dark areas that persist outside the range of my experience. I draw on what I have learned so that I can make these assumptions as plausible and credible as I can, aiming to maximize the likelihood that they will prove accurate. The more I learn, the better I become at this kind of probability assessment. But I seldom can be totally certain of anything, and I never can be even reasonably certain of everything. My explorations are partly personal and involve my direct experience with the world around me. These are the best kind. But I also rely on the explorations of others. Otherwise, I wouldn't get very far. Throughout my life, I've been adding not only to my store of vicariously acquired knowledge, but to my skill at separating data that has been acquired through the goal, that has been acquired through verifiable means from that which has not. It is all part of the overarching process of developing a comprehensive worldview that adds to the functionality of my group. And what was Kuhn's group? Kuhn declared that his group was humanity. And he declared this on the basis of everything he had learned in his life. He also explained that his declaration was a matter of faith, though not a careless leap of faith or compliance with the demand of some external authority. Rather, Kuhn learned the wisdom of this particular faith through his own experience by working it out for himself. And he urged us to do likewise, saying if we could think of a better place than humanity to establish a base point, one that suited us better, then we should take it. Today, faith in humanity seems like a pretty good starting place to me. And it is most certainly a place where each of us, as Unitarian Universalists, can meet to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another, and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience, and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Thank you.